Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen. Sorry to tell you that Paul is still too ill to come to Ames. Paul, believe me, we really miss you, especially today. You know two of our guests, and they know you, and they were looking forward to being interviewed by you. So take care of yourself and get well soon. Our first guest is Jay Wilson, Executive Director of the Story City Greater Chamber Connection. There is a lot to talk about in Story City right now. Jay, I'm glad you're with us.
Oh, thanks, Susan. I'm glad to be here.
Well, first, several local papers have had articles about the $75,000 grant awarded by the Iowa Economic Development Authority as a Main Street Iowa Challenge grant. Can you tell us what that's for?
Oh, absolutely. Let's start a little bit with the building owners, Rob and Crystal Byrne, and their company is These Iowa Roots. So Rob and Crystal had this passion and desire for historic buildings and to take one and revitalize it and restore it back to its original roots, where they got the name from. So as they were looking for buildings, this one came up for sale last year, and they thought this would be a great project to restore, because originally back in 1915, this particular building at 522 Broad Street was two different buildings.
So
before that, it was only a one-story wooden structure before that. So in 1915, Story City, there's a lot of building going around Story City, a lot of brick buildings, structures going up, two stories, you know, much larger than the ones in the past. So these two buildings were built then.
And
so their vision is to take that back to those two buildings.
So they're two-story brick buildings. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Now the owners, were they specifically looking for buildings in Story City?
They wanted Story City. They've been here for about 10 years and they love Story City, so they wanted it again. They had this passion and desire, but they wanted to do something really that would help the community to grow, you know, both economically and aesthetically. So they thought this was a really great project. It was a very detailed project because, again, when we talk about those two buildings built in 1915, the upper facade, the outer brick and layout, has all been covered by metal panels. So they're going to take all that off, expose all that, restore the brick, and those window columns on the upper story and the middle building, there's actually two cement pillars that looked amazing. It was one back again, 1915, the architecture, and they were going all out and going big, and unfortunately over years, different owners covered different things up, so they're going to expose all that and take it back to its origins.
Well, I would think the covering up is a mixed problem because it also preserves the old brick and cement.
A lot of times, yes, you get in there and you uncover some of that. You're like, oh, this is actually in good shape. But sometimes you uncover it, and it's worse than what you imagine. So,
which one is this?
They don't know everything that's back and behind there, but they are very optimistic that it's very good and totally restorable.
Well, I would think it's also a very important part of Main Street Story City because that's the block that has the theater, isn't that right? The Opera House?
Yeah. With this project, that's going to take this block all the way back to its 1915-17 origins, and like the hotel block that includes the Story Theater, the City Hall, and the Dinners by Dawn building, those are all listed on the National Registry of Historic Places.
And will these be when they're finished, or are they now?
They're hoping to get the building done by spring. No. I'm not sure if they're intent on trying to get that registered on the registry or not. So that's a bridge we can cross next year.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty exciting development.
Very exciting.
Of course, between now and spring, you still have a lot of other businesses. And I believe that this weekend is the beginning of the official Christmas shopping with Small Business Saturday.
Right. Yeah, we're excited for Small Business Saturday. And it kind of ties in a little bit to Kids Day, which is a Saturday morning where parents can drop their kids off with us here. We'll take them up to Viking Hall. We got breakfast we're going to feed them. Santa's going to come and tell a story about how the Grinch stole Christmas. They'll have games and all kinds of things, keep them busy till around 11, and then the Grinch is going to be out on the street visiting all the stores downtown here, and the kids are encouraged to go find him and give them their heart with their Christmas wish on there, so his heart will grow and he can save Christmas.
Well, that's a different way to... Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Is that new this year, or where does this come from?
A new kind of thing we did this year. The businesses all will have a hidden Grinch in their store, too, that the kids are that they have to find, too. So there's a scavenger hunt going on. There's 13 businesses that we actually have. They're participating in Shop Small Saturday. And they have a lot of great specials. I have to talk about one of the ones I'm really excited about because I love the Jacobsons. So Jacobson's Gun Center is celebrating their 40th year anniversary this year of being in business downtown Surrey City.
And so what is there for kids in a gun store?
Well, they can find the Grinch there.
They can find the Grinch.
Right, but more importantly, for the kids' parents who might be doing some of their Christmas shopping, and if you're looking for that guy's present that sometimes is hard to find, or maybe a gal.
Oh, I see. So the kids can go look for the Grinch, and the adults can look at the merchandise. Is that?
Yep. Parents are encouraged to shop. So, and we've got a bag full of Story City coupons and gifts and swag that parents or anybody can come down and pick up here at the office starting at 9 a.m. Saturday morning. All the stores are open at 9 a.m. as well. I think maybe True Value and Wheeler's Auto are open a little bit earlier. But all the stores have a lot of great specials, some unique items that you can't find anywhere else. I was in True Value Hardware the other day, and they have this big, huge display of smoker items, like wood chips, sauces, rubs. I mean, it's ginormous. I'm like, oh, that's amazing. I'm not much of a meat smoker. I'm a griller, but... there's some great stuff they have there that I've never seen anywhere.
And so right there in Story City.
Right. Yeah. You never know the amazing things you can find here. We posted a couple photos of some stuff we found in stores as we were kind of wandering around and seeing what everybody's got for the holidays. I know I'm not much of a snowman because I don't like snow, and there's a little bit on the ground this morning. But Tin Chandelier has this really... cute snowman who has a tin hat on. He looks like the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz. And my wife is a big Wizard of Oz fan, so she might be getting a new snowman.
Now, what is Tin Chandelier?
They are just a mixture store. They have a lot of antiques, they have some vintage stuff, and they have some new items. So again, it's just one of those surprises. You'll never know what you'll find in there.
Well, in the past, when I used to visit friends in Story City, we used to go to the Scandinavian shop. Do you still have a Scandinavian shop?
We don't anymore. The Tin Chandelier has a few items. New Care Pharmacy has a few Scandinavian items. I think they're trying to carry more because of our Scandinavian store that closed last year. We truly miss her.
Oh, yes, that's a big loss. Are there any others that we should talk about before we let you go?
Other than the building project, it's an amazing project. I can't wait to see the finished product next. They're hoping, again, spring for the to be completed, possibly summer. Depends on how things go over the winter and how the weather will accommodate everything. They're planning to redo both the apartments upstairs, which haven't been used since the 1970s, so it's going to give us an additional housing downtown. I think it'll be one studio and one large one-bedroom apartment. So they've got a lot of the insides all gutted and ready for design. One of the very unique things that I found when they were doing the inside was they uncovered this tile floor underneath about five layers of different flooring from over the years, and have restored that, and they're using that in part of their design for that space, as well as the old vault and the safety deposit boxes.
Oh, well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, so they're trying to utilize anything they find within the building and repurpose it. And that's one of the things Main Street, Iowa, encourages, and that's why they were given the $75,000 grant for this particular project, because it does revitalize an old historic building and is part of historic preservation, but is also economically stimulating.
Well, it does make a lot of difference when you restore an old building. I was involved in my hometown with a restoration project, or I should say a building that I really cared about, my home, which was an old hotel, was about to be demolished. They'd already voted to demolish it, and I... Mm-hmm. It took many years, actually, of people fighting. It was on the National Historic Register, which is what really saved it. But the tile floor is what made me think about it, because we had a tile floor when I was a child, and it had been covered up first by asphalt tile and then by carpet. And someone had bought it and peeled away all those things, and when I saw that floor, I felt that building had to stay. And so you don't have to fight City Hall. City Hall, I'm sure, is all behind you.
They are. They were very supportive of this project. And there are many groups and organizations in town wrote letters of support to Main Street in all, the whole scope of the project and what it would do for Story City. So we're very happy and thankful for Main Street and providing services like this and a program like that that can help building owners do these kind of things and help small towns continue to grow and retain their historic significance.
Well, that's a very, very fine organization, and we love to cover the things that Main Street is doing for the towns around here in our 7-county listening area. Thank you so much, Jay, for talking with us. We'll be hearing from you in the future about how things are going in Story City.
Oh, yeah. Always keep in touch. We've got a lot of things going on. We're continuing to grow in many different ways.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. You have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Water's wide, I can't get over. Neither have I wings to fly. Give me a boat that will row to, and we'll sail, my love and I. A ship that sails the sea, it's loaded deep as deep can be, but not as deep as the love I'm in. I know not if I sink or swim. Thank you. Love be gentle. Love be kind. Fair as a flower. First it's new, but love grows old and waxes cold. Thus did my Lord, who falls to me. The water's wide, I can't get old. Neither have I wings to fly. Give me a boat that will go to, and we'll say love and I.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. I've just been talking with Jay Wilson for the Story City Greater Chamber Connection, telling us about a grant that will make a big difference to Story City's historic downtown. Our next story is also about a grant, but in the meantime, Pat Schlarbaum is here.
Yes, good morning, Susan.
Well, thank you for coming in. As you know, Paul isn't with us.
Yeah, we're all pulling for Paul Wearson. I hope his medical situation has a gracious healing, and he gets a feeling better, especially
yes.
This time of year.
Yes. Well, and I think you're in here to pitch with me, but I'd like to dedicate this pitch period especially to Paul, because his voice and his skill at drawing out interviewees is unmatched, and I'm feeling the loss.
Well, he certainly is a radio voice of high regard, and I think his what he brings to the KHOI recording studio are stories with a unique flair for Central Iowa. Just as a good example, your last interview with Mr. Wilson right there in Story City, that is a type of programming that community radio can share and it can assist in strengthening our communities. And it's unique to a community radio station, and it's hard to get too much of that. It's good to put a spotlight on yourself, Susan Franzen, and Paul Wearson. What a dynamic duo. You have carved out in a very essential niche of interrelated activities in the seven-county listening area. It's just a fabulous acknowledgement for this time of year. So why don't I just encourage our listener, if you're hearing this for the first time, realize that this is the type of programming that is one of KHOI's strength. And by going to our website, khoifm.org, and locating the donate button, locating the membership button. You can, if you are a member, you can share that with your family and friends and different community groups that you may be networking with, because this is the time of year when we appeal to people's benevolence and share the blessings, share the open-heartedness that this radio station can provide Central Iowa community.
Thank you, Pat. Our next story is also about generosity and a grant. Our first story was about the grant for Story City. This is from the Story County Community Foundation, the umbrella organization for more than 165 different funds established by individuals, families, and nonprofit organizations to benefit Story County. In early November, it awarded its annual grants to Story County nonprofit organizations totaling $117,413. Awards were announced during a reception at Ryman Gardens. This year, KHOI Radio was fortunate enough to be awarded funds for professional recording equipment to assist its reporters to more easily and efficiently record stories covering the community. Story County Community Foundation was eager to highlight each of the grants received, and today's was scheduled with Mayor Martin Heer of Zering. Due to electronic miscommunication, we discovered while we were on the air that our guest was unavailable. Fortunately, Pat Schlarbaum was still in the studio, so we had a conversation which turned out to be very appropriate of volunteer fire departments in the towns in rural Story County. Well, I was very, very pleased to see that the major grant was for the Emergency Zering Fire Department retrofit project. I can talk a little bit more about what I've seen of the volunteer, and you probably have too, Pat.
I have a story. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, my story is what I learned about the Kelly Fire Department was, number one, they don't work alone. They have to get help from other fire departments. And so all of the volunteer fire departments need to be strong and able to come on really, of course, a moment's notice. And so a lot of their funding goes to training their volunteer firemen, firepersons, their fire department. They also are first responders. And so some of their work is, you know, somebody has a 911 call and they have a heart attack, and these emergency rescue people go and do whatever is necessary until the ambulance comes. And so they're really lifelines for these small communities.
Yeah, the responsibilities for assisting the community goes far beyond just fighting fires.
Yes.
When it comes to emergencies of any sort. I know tornadoes and flood situations will bring out the volunteer fire departments. And now that there has been quite a bit of prairie planted in our landscape areas around the county, and it wasn't long before we realized if there was a prairie fire that would occur, usually starting in a roadside and then be moving through a prairie area, then somebody would call the fire department. And they were always well-equipped to come out and try to fight the fire. And so often with prairie fires, it's a matter of understanding the wind and setting up back burns and essentially approaching a fire from the standpoint of containment rather than trying to extinguish it. So, and this has just been happening in the last decade or so that the Department of Natural Resources then was able to kind of start networking with these volunteer fire departments. So in the event that they were called to one of the prairie areas that was burning, in how to approach that in a manner that the fire could be contained, and offering water trucks and things in the form of equipment. Now, then the equipment was available, obviously, for any urban situation or anybody's domicile. But it was a nice association. It was great to see that growth and development of the community fire departments learning about essentially a new habitat entity on the landscape. And I say new because now we're really trying to rediscover our prairie heritage. But these prairie areas, there's a lot of fuel out there. And during dry areas, they are somewhat vulnerable to and prairies like to be burnt. So it's not as if it's a terrible thing. But containing them is more than responsible. As a separate sidelight, I'm wondering how they're approaching these large, you know, the stover piles, you know, for the cellulosic ethanol production. Now you see these big areas where just thousands of these.
Well, I think that's been a problem.
Yeah.
I think that they did have a big fire with the some of that cellulosic ethanol fuel. Yes, but I'd like to mention also that one of the things that I realized when I was in Kelly was that something you don't think about, the fire departments in town, of course, can hook up to fire hydrants. But you mentioned the water trucks. They have to bring the water to fight the fire.
Yeah.
And so it's really much more difficult. in every way than a fire in town.
Yeah, the these prairie areas, conservation areas devoted to prairie, it's a wonderful resource, but it has complicated or created the need for some additional management tools, if you will, or equipment. And the water trucks were a big part of that. And the Department of Natural Resources has a program that will assist these county volunteer fire departments in that regard.
While we were describing the general work of the fire departments, I learned from our engineer, Paul Hertz, who was trying to place the calls to Mayor here, that unbeknownst to me, this program had been postponed until January 15th. So we'll get to hear the rest of the story. But actually, Pat, I'm glad that we had this chance to talk in general about the fire work of the fire departments, and especially the prairie fires, because that's not something that city people usually think about.
Well, yeah, it's something new to the landscape, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for stepping
my
in,
pleasure.
Pat. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. We'll take a break with some fiddle music to get us into the mood to hear from storyteller Darren Crow, who will preview his presentation for Owls next week. Hi, Darren. Thank you for speaking.
Hello.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear your voice. yesterday, I thought you'd be talking with Paul Wearson, a fellow storyteller, but he's sick this morning, so I'll do my best to fill in. First, please tell our listeners a little about yourself.
Well, I'm from over here in Cedar Rapids, and golly, I was born in Cedar Rapids and have lived there most of my life. And I live here in Cedar Rapids with my wife, my three sons, and my two cats.
Well, it sounds like you've got the basic qualifications to be an Iowa storyteller. Now, what? when did you start telling stories, and what kind do you like to tell?
Well, you know, because I'm an Iowan, I can say this to people, and they readily know what I'm talking about. I started telling stories in high school when I was doing speech, because
yes.
Iowans all over the state have been doing speech for 120 years. So,
Yes, Paul, as you may know, one of his favorite volunteer activities is Speak Up with fifth graders. It's a 6-week program that he does in the schools in this area, and he loves fifth graders. And when we go into a school, the kids flock to him because they've been in his class and they enjoyed it so much. So you started off in the fifth grade, I'll bet.
Yep. And you know, we just kept talking ever since, because in Iowa you're forced to, and because I like it. Once I started into high school, I was volunteering with Usher's Ferry Historic Village, a living history museum here in Cedar Rapids. And, you know, museum work is all about telling people stories about their past. And so from there, a love of both history and of stories just developed. And eventually I said, you know what? I really like these stories an awful lot. Maybe I could spend all of my days just telling people the stories.
Oh, so are you really a professional storyteller all the time, like full time?
I am. This is my job, yes.
Oh, wow.
I know. I am a tremendously fortunate person.
Well, it sounds like a little bit of a challenge, though, because you must have to keep coming up with some new stories, right, all the time?
Well, you know, that there is some that, yes, you need to come up with new things during summer reading program season with libraries. There's a new theme every summer, and so you do have to come up with and find new stories to tell people. When I'm visiting classrooms, I get to tell some of the same stories again and again, year after year, because I know, for example, that second graders are studying coal mining in Iowa. So I get to bring the story of my great-grandma, who grew up in the coal mining camp of Ladsdale in southern Iowa, and tell them about life in a coal camp.
Oh, that's
that every year.
That's wonderful. And, of course, that's a family story you're telling them then, so it's really special.
It is. And what's neat is then a couple of years later in fourth grade, when they studied the Great Depression, I can bring the story of her daughter, my grandma, and talk about her story during the Great Depression. And so they're already familiar with the family when they come into fourth grade, which is really neat.
So the story that you're going to be telling in Ames, which will be next Tuesday, I think I'll right now give that information so people can start thinking about getting there. This is the monthly Owls, an older, wiser, livelier souls program, and it's on December 3rd at 11 a.m. Now, this is important, especially for people who have come to OWLS meetings in the past. Due to construction at the Conservation Center, this month's program will be held at Northcrest Community's Fireside Building. That's 1801 20th Street in Ames. It's a separate building near the entrance, and I've been there when it was hard for me to find it, but I understand from Jerry Keyes that it will be well marked. There'll be signs so that it's easy to find. Anyone is
good, because I'm not all that smart. So
you mean you might have a little trouble finding it. anyone is invited to attend the presentation, but if you'd like to stay for lunch afterwards, you need to make a reservation. Registration for lunch with payment is required by 4 p.m. Friday, November 29th. The planned lunch menu is beef and noodles, mashed potatoes, mixed veggies, dinner roll, and chocolate pound cake. And so if you're interested in that, be sure you contact the Conservation Center by this Friday.
I have to make sure I get my reservation in. That sounds
well, I bet you can have lunch because you come from Cedar Rapids to talk and tell us a story. So now the story that you told was they had in their promotional literature that why don't you tell people what it's going to be about.
Sure. I love Iowa history, and so I wanted to bring a couple of my favorite stories from Iowa history with me. And one of those is, of course, the story of the Great Honey War, which happens even before we're a state. It's still territorial days. And it's the day that Iowa was nearly invaded by Missouri.
Well, that's a red letter day, I'm sure.
Well, you know, it's funny because it happens over and over again for the first 15 or 20 years. So this is just the first time.
You mean Missouri kept wanting to invade Iowa?
Well, you know, there were several incursions across the border. This first round actually happens because of the state border and, well, the territorial border at that point, and some wild honey trees. And that should be a good enough teaser to make people say, what is this story about?
Yeah, it prompts me to think about whether we still have wild honey in Iowa. Do you know?
No, that sounds like the kind of question for the Conservation Center, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, Pat left too soon. I bet he knows. But anyway.
I would imagine we probably do, though, because there's still plenty of nice wild place left here and there in our terrific state parks. So.
Well, I think the reason I thought about the wild honey is because we visited a friend in Hawaii a few years ago, and she had found a hive across the road from her and had moved it to her property and was, you know, taking care of the bees and had... we were actually there when the beekeepers came with their white net suits, and there was a beetle, I think, that was getting into the hive, and they were, you know, they were trying to treat for the beetle. So I don't know. I don't know whether how well those bees would have continued to do in the wild, but it was very impressive to me that people cared so much that they would go to great lengths to rescue the wild hive, and I guess rescue was appropriate, because.
Yeah. And of course, it makes a certain amount of sense that a conflict develops over these things, because in 1837 in the Iowa Territory, honey was our only source, just about, of sweetener, and so to come across a large source of wild honey is incredibly valuable, and you don't let anybody know where your bee tree is, and if somebody is to take that from you, well, them's fighting words right there.
I guess that's the background of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds very like a very interesting program. I'll definitely try to get there. 11 o'clock on December 3rd, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And so since we have a few extra minutes, I'd like to know a little more about where you tell stories when you're not coming to Ames.
Oh, you bet. I'll tell stories wherever I can find a spot to tell them. But my two main places are in libraries and in schools around the state, because those are two places that focus pretty heavily on stories. And in libraries, I spend a lot of time in the summer with small people and sharing folktales and fairy tales and history stories. Here in the wintertime and fall, it's been sharing stories with adults. So all through October, it was stories of Edgar Allan Poe. And now as we're moving into the Christmas and Thanksgiving season, it'll be some stories from historic Iowa Thanksgiving and Christmas time, which has been a lot of fun.
You mentioned that when you were a student, you worked at it sounds like a kind of a living history farm near Cedar Rapids. I don't know about that.
Yes, I worked for Usher's Ferry Historic Village, which is it's a living history museum. Rather than focusing on farm life, it focuses on small town life in Iowa, roughly between 1890 and 1910. It's a kind of cool place. And if people are around Cedar Rapids, they should stop over and visit sometime.
Well, that's good to know about. That's another, even though it's a little out of our listening area, we like to tell people where they could take road trips. Sounds like a
absolutely
a good one.
We'd love to have you Ames people come over to Cedar Rapids. We think we're kind of a nice place.
Okay. But thanks for coming to visit us next Tuesday. So thank you.
Thanks for a lovely conversation. This has been great.
Well, I did my best without Paul here to help me. Okay. See you next Tuesday. And thank you
thanks
very
so
much for speaking with us. Next week, we'll probably be talking about more Christmas activities, more Christmas small town activities. I'm sure talking about Nevada. I know from the schedule they've got their big thing is next weekend, not this coming weekend, but the following one. And we'll also be talking about some of the events, the many events that will be happening in December. So I will read a couple of those. And Paul, could you find some appropriate music to end with? Okay. Well, the first one I will mention is the Ames Choral Society Winter Concert Remembering Decembers. This is December 8th at 3 p.m. at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church, 209 Colorado Avenue. The Ames Choral Society presents its holiday concert, Remembering Decembers, on Saturday, December 8th at 3 p.m. at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church, directed by Steve Hoyfelt. With Barb Evenson accompanist, the concert program has been selected to reflect the hope for peace and joy in the world in this holiday time. The concert includes an audience sing-along of familiar songs, followed by a reception. So that's the first weekend in December. The second one is the Ames Chamber Artists Concert, Walking Through Winter at the Collegiate Presbyterian Church, 159 North Sheldon Avenue. It's at 7:30 p.m. The Ames Choral Society is 3 p.m. The Ames Chamber Artists are at 7:30. The Ames Chamber Artists will perform choral works exploring the many layers and moments of winter months in their fall 2019 concert entitled Walking Through Winter. Concert goers will visit the beauty and contemplation found in a winter snowfall, in snow toward evening, experience the anticipation and hope of Advent in Universi qui tu expectant, and imagine a child greeting the infant Jesus in Go Little Child. We'll also perform the Missa Pacem by Northwest composer Mark Hosfo, a 15-minute major work for choir and piano. And, of course, the Ames Children's Choir is performing their annual winter concert. This will be at 3 p.m. on Saturday, December 7th, at Collegiate United Methodist Church, 2622 Lincoln Way, Ames. The program will feature music in a variety of languages, including English, Yoik, is that right? Greek, Latin, and German, accompanied by piano, organ, flute, hammered dulcimer, and percussion. The Ames Children's Choir consists of four ensembles featuring treble and mixed voices. Singers range in age from 7 to 18 and hail from various communities, including Ames, Boone, Huxley, Madrid, Nevada, and Ogden. So this is really a Central Iowa concert. Should we tell where people can get the tickets, or can you get them at the door? I guess you can. They can get them at Ryman Music in Ames. Okay. And do we have some music to close out the hour to sort of get us in the mood for that? I guess maybe not yet. But the children's concert often used to go to the Elam Lutheran Church. Isn't that right?
Yeah, not anymore.
But they don't do it anymore. And that was, I guess maybe they got too big for the church. It's a lovely little auditorium, though. The variety of music, of Christmas music here is quite interesting. I'm sure there are also concerts from the at the university, but these are community concerts. And as Kathy Sveck told me yesterday when I was interviewing her, that KHOI is really the place where publicity for community concerts, community theater, community events is front and center. And we have, of course, a community calendar where you can hear on a regular basis for an informative bites throughout the week what's coming up. But we here on Local Talk like to feature especially the music, and next week we'll be talking about the Central Iowa Symphony's concert, which is not a holiday concert, but I'll leave that in suspense for that one. We'll just take advantage of the time that we have left and listen to a selection from a past concert of Ames Chamber Artists.
Oh, dancing children.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen. Other voices you heard were Jay Wilson, Pat Schlarbaum, and Darren Crow. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was engineered by Paul Hertz. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Leap Dog, played by fiddler Erin O'Neill from her album Tunes from Mallory, and In Dolce Jubilo by the Cambridge Singers. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.